Hello and welcome to episode 11 of The Call of Nature. We are a UK-based grassroots podcast about nature, wildlife and the environment for everyday people just like you. So thank you very much for listening to this episode. If it's your first one, then welcome. Hope you enjoy it. And if you're a regular listener, then welcome back. So I'm joined today by Amanda and Pete. Say hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. And we've got some cool stuff on the show today. First up, we've got a chat that Pete and I had with Zeon Lights. She's a real expert on the climate crisis and was explaining what it's all about and what you, the listener, can do to help out. Then we have a thing that Gareth made, which is about something that I'd never heard of before, called the Mast Year. And following that, we have a chat with our new team member, Dawood Qureshi, telling us about how he got into nature and what sort of things he's into. But first, our disclaimer.
The views and opinions expressed in The Call of Nature are those of whoever expressed them and do not reflect those of any other organisation or agency.
Lovely.
Hello, everyone. So we don't have our Dr. Gareth with us today, and that means we're without our resident nature expert or any expert. So what are we going to talk about, guys?
Well, I'll start if you like. So one of my mates messaged me the other day thinking I'd left after I wasn't in the last episode. So I thought it'd be a really good idea to tell everybody what's going on regarding personnel. We, in season one, you may have heard us talking about how we're three middle-aged white blokes and we wanted to alter that. And so we've deliberately increased the size of the team. We needed to do that anyway because we were all super busy. But we've now got five people in the team. So there's me, Gareth and Chris, Amanda, who's here, and Dawood, who we've told you we're going to start introducing this evening. So that's exciting. And we're going to have three people on each episode rather than have all five of us trying to shout over each other to get heard. So it'll be a fairly random selection of the three of us each week. But you'll hear all of our voices doing different features and interviews and all that sort of thing. So that's what's going on. And the other important business I've got to sort out is I got a message from Julietta, who's at Garden Wild on Instagram, but wild with an E on the end. And Julietta saw my photo of us on our nature walk, Chris, recently.
Where
Gareth put an otter poo right in your hand. Do you remember?
I do, yeah. Yeah. He found that was really cool. He found a little bit of the sticking out into the river. And he was like, oh, that looks like a place where otters would go through. And scrutted about on the riverbank for a bit and came back with a handful of shit. Can we say shit?
I don't know.
Well, we just said it. We can beep it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't his own shit.
That's an important point. So the question, I forgot to say, so without Gareth here, we don't have any science experts. Dawood is a student of marine biology, so he's our sort of up-and-coming science expert. So generally in the episodes, we'll have one or the other of them. But we're just going to have to Google everything tonight, aren't we, Chris? But the question was, and this is one you can answer without Googling it, is what was the beer that you were holding on that trip and that you two were drinking?
I can't remember. Oh, no, I do know. I think I know, because we popped into the Stroud Brewery.
Yeah, it was sort of posh-looking Waitrose beer.
No, it was. I think it was from Stroud Brewery, and I think it was one called Elderflower, which they make with elderflower flowers. They brew it up with elderflowers, because this bit of the world used to be, in fact, there's some old, defunct, and now closed elderflower orchards up on the top of the hills around here. So it's like sourcing some of the local produce and incorporate it into the beer, which is very good. I'm hoping they'll be listening and they'll like send the podcast a crate of beer now. But I think those might be high hopes.
Well, there you go, Julietta. It was elderflower. Is that what you said, Chris?
Yeah, that's how you. Yeah, just get in touch and I'll give you the address to send the free crate to.
So, what's your nature story this week, Chris?
Well, I must admit, Pete, I've had a fairly sparse couple of weeks nature-wise, having spent most of my time sitting at a desk at work. But I did see some very angry nature about 3 or 4 days ago when we had a real flash hailstorm. And it was absolutely, it's probably the most vicious but short storm I've ever seen. I looked out the window, it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was like, oh, why is it getting dark? That's weird. And then about 10 minutes later, there was crashing lightning and thunder and just rivers running up and down the pavement full of these massive hailstones. And then another 10 minutes later, the sun was out. And we were sweeping flood water out of the workshop. So, yeah, very dramatic. And I suppose it's something we'll probably see a bit more of with some of the changes in our climate, which we're likely to see in coming years. So, yeah, that was quite dramatic. Amanda, have you had any nature highlights since we last spoke?
Yeah, well, there's this bush on the road near me, and it's just... it's like a talking bush, basically. It's absolutely full of sparrows. You've got about, I'm not great at counting how many sparrows, but sometimes maybe about 50 sparrows, it seems, in this bush. And they're all just cheeping away, singing away. And yeah, you can't help but stop and stare. You can't see them either until they all fly out all at once occasionally. But yeah, it's really amazing. I think that's probably my nature highlight.
I love that. Big groups of sparrows like that in someone's privet hedge. They all seem to get together in the morning, have a big meeting, don't they, and sort out all the day's business. And they're all yelling at each other about something, and then they'll kind of go back to normal again, don't they? It's great.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I bet there are bushes like that in, you know, probably several in every town all over the country. Mm. There's one in my road, not probably in the same scale as your one, but that's a dense, it's, I actually, no, I'm not great on plants, but I know that this is a pyracantha, or like a fire thorn they're called, and in this time of year they have those bright orange or red berries. I don't know if they're native plants. Gareth would be most upset if I was talking about a non-native plant. But he's not here. But they're great for refuges for these little sparrow meetings, aren't they?
So obviously something that's affecting nature at the moment is climate change, and here's a chat Chris and Pete had on the subject. Let's go and have a listen.
Joining Pete and I now, we have Zeon Lights. Zeon is a former Extinction Rebellion spokesperson, and she was the founder of the newspaper Hourglass. She's also an author and writes about environmental issues and parenting. But she's here on the show today as an expert on the climate crisis, which we know is a threat to both nature and people. But she's here to tell us a little bit more for those of us who maybe aren't as familiar with the whole thing, and to give some tips on what people can do to help out. So, Zeon, hi.
Hi, thanks for that introduction.
Hi, Zeon, thanks for joining us. So like Chris said, a lot of people have already heard about the climate crisis and know all about it. Others maybe know less about it. Would you mind telling us exactly what's happening, please?
Sure, and thanks for having me on the show, first of all.
You're welcome.
We've known about climate change for quite a long time. In the 1800s, scientists were predicting that the greenhouse effect would impact the state of the planet. So what this means is the way we live is very highly intensive. You know, we have a lot of industries, a lot of energy. These things put greenhouse gases, especially carbon dioxide, into the atmosphere, and that is causing the planet to warm up. Now, that's been happening for quite a long time, and that theory existed for a long time. But now we have more and more evidence that it actually is happening and that we are driving it. So in 2018, the IPCC, that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, crunched some really good data. They put together a really good document called the 1.5 Warming Report. And I wouldn't expect people to read it because it's quite, you know, it's quite intense data. It's quite difficult to read through, but It's basically, you know, something like 90 of the world's top scientists from 40 different countries all sat down. They looked at the numbers, they looked at what's happening, and they've said, you know, there is no question that we are on a trajectory for, you know, quite severe global warming. It's not just that the temperature is rising, but they sort of said, well, you know, here's what will happen if we don't keep below 1.5 warming, you know, that actually it looks like, you know, we're facing so many extremes because of that. So not just worsening kind of weather conditions, but, you know, and natural disasters, but things like species extinction. So they said in that report, we could try and keep to below 1.5 warming. And they sort of outline how to do it, which I think is probably going to be your next question anyway.
It was. So it sounds like all of this could have quite a big impact on both nature and people, obviously. But with bearing in mind that all of this science has been done, what's being done about it currently?
Well, this is the worrying thing, is not a lot. We've had many opportunities to act and start bringing down emissions. So all you really need to understand about climate change is it's to do with rising emissions. And so we know we're dealing with a problem when we see the emissions coming down, or we see a plan that shows that those emissions are going to come down. Now, despite all the protests and all the scientists speaking about it and all the articles written about it and high awareness about climate change and high concern for the environment and species extinction, that actually hasn't been done. That's where we're at right now. So there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. If you go back to the 1.5 warming report, it very clearly outlines how we can bring down our emissions to get to net zero by 2050. So our government has made a commitment to bring down emissions to net zero by 2050, but there is no plan. And at the moment, if we carry on the trajectory we're on, those emissions will just keep going up. You know, we really need to make huge changes. So what this means is reducing the amount of emissions that we're putting into the atmosphere. So it requires quite a lot of changes, both, you know, the way that people live, but also, you know, the changes that the government needs to implement, basically. And so our UK, our government has agreed to a net zero target by 2050. But at the moment, there isn't a plan to show how we will get to that position. The report lays out exactly how to do it. It looks at energy generation, land use, industry, and it basically, it's just numbers. You know, it's just hard data. It says, here's how many emissions we need to lose from this sector, and here's how to do it. So in a way, that's good news that there is, you know, there's a way to do it. There's a plan to do it. But at the moment, that's not being implemented.
So that's very interesting. Well, the governments might not be quite on board and pulling their weight just yet, but that doesn't mean that as individuals, of course, we can't do something, does it? But I know people I've spoken with, and maybe some of our listeners, want to do the right things, but they perhaps are a bit overwhelmed or by the shopping list of things they've heard about. So in simple terms, Zion, what would you advise people to do if they want to do the right thing to help with this?
Well, as you know, I authored a book on how to lower your carbon footprint some years ago. And I have quite a small carbon footprint. You know, I don't drive. I gave up flying a long time ago. But what I would say is that I don't think that is necessarily the way for people to act. So we have a lot of, many of us have been doing this for years. And actually, even if we all did it, it's just not in, it's not going to bring down emissions the amount that we need. So although these are good things to do, it's always good to cycle or walk whenever you can, you know, especially for the local environment, that's all really important. We really do have to put pressure on government. So that's why you have things like Extinction Rebellion and Fridays for the Future, trying to put pressure on government to actually, you know, act. But they have their own kind of approaches and they have their own ideas. And if you look at Extinction Rebellion, it's not just about climate change, it's also about system change. If you're just concerned about climate change and you want, you know, to see real rapid action on this, I cannot underestimate the impact people have when they engage with their politicians, when they write to their MPs, when they push for real action in all these areas. So we're talking about, you know, we need to build better structures for energy so that we're not reliant. For example, at the moment we still use coal a lot of the time. We're mostly reliant on fossil fuels. And when you look at what the actions that need to be taken, most of it is energy. About 75% of the emissions are from energy. So that's a huge thing that actually people can't do a lot about. We could use less energy, but that's not still not going to be enough to bring us down to net zero. So what we need is clean energy options. So for me, you know, anybody looks at my work, they'll see that I've now started campaigning for nuclear power, which is actually something I used to be against. But then I read up a lot about it. I looked at the data and I thought, okay, this is safe, not only safe, but it's actually so much safer than fossil fuels, which have a really high death toll in terms of just from the extraction process, you know, from obviously from contributing to climate change, but also from air pollution, which is something a lot of people don't think about. You know, millions of people are killed by air pollution every year, and people who have to live locally by, you know, things like coal plants, they suffer severe health issues. We really shouldn't be using coal at all in the 21st century, you know, not in the developed countries. So it's really about putting pressure on governments to look at the IPCC, which, you know, it says in the energy section, we need this much renewables, we need this much carbon capture storage, we need this much nuclear. All the numbers are in there. It's just getting them to listen to the data, to look at the evidence and to make decisions based on it. And if they do that and we see a plan come together, then we've got this in the bag. You know, it's actually not as difficult as people make it sound. And I really think we need to shift away a little bit from this idea of it's all on our backs. There's definitely things we can do. But I think a lot of people are trying to do those things. That's not enough when you look at things like we all have to use energy and we don't really have a lot of control over where that comes from. So we need governments to act on that, and we need to engage with politicians on that, and we need to, you know, write letters and send tweets and do all the things that does make them sit up and go, okay, you know, they're concerned about this and they want to see action in this area, therefore we are going to do X, Y, Z thing.
Yeah, I love the idea of that really, to make the biggest difference, we need to pressure the people who have the most influence over making positive change, because we can all do that. We all have MPs and we all have social media and email accounts. So, yeah, that's really interesting. Thanks very much, Sion. It's been great having you on the show, and maybe we'll hear from you again at some point.
Thank you. I hope it's useful.
It really is, Zion. Thank you very much.
Oh, that was really great. Zion sounds so cool. Thanks, Zion, for coming on the programme. And if anyone wants to find her, you can find her online at ZionTree on Twitter or zionlights.co.uk. And Zion is spelled Z-I-O-N. What did you take away from that, guys?
Well, for me, I'd been feeling a bit despondent about climate change and everything, and thinking that maybe we didn't have the tools to sort it out, you know, humanity. So for me to hear from Zion that actually we do, that was really, really encouraging. I really liked having a nice, clear message from an expert on what the best thing to do is. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, much the same, Pete. I liked how she spoke so positively about the fact that we've got power to make a difference. And I write to my MP quite a lot anyway about various things, including environmental issues. I think you do too, don't you, Amanda?
I do, yeah, I do. Don't really necessarily always hear back, but...
No, I'm sure she's busy.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed listening to that and really took away that feeling of hope, and that, yeah, we have got a chance to put things right.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's nice. Folks, a message of hope. So, Amanda, what's next?
It's Gareth talking about something called a mastia, whatever that is.
So it's a pretty windy autumn day, but it's nice and sunny. So I thought I'd come out and do a bit of that leaf kicking that Chris was talking about a few weeks ago. But one of the things I've noticed is there's hazelnuts everywhere. I've got this hazel tree on my path, and you're going down, you're crunching away. You can hear some of them here. Also, there's rose hips everywhere. There's been abundance of blackberries. So all of the fruits and nut bearing trees in the woodlands around us seem to be having a really big year. And I sort of wanted to look into why this is. And it's what's called a mast year. A mast comes from the old English term, which is really fruits and nuts of the forest. So it's a bounty. And these happen every 5 to 10 years, when basically you get a huge increase in the amount of nuts and fruits being produced by trees. And there's an old wives' tale, apparently, that a mast year used to precede a cold winter. Now, I guess we're going to find out if that's true or not in the coming months. But they aren't wrong in the fact that mast years are very heavily controlled by the temperature. And it's always thought that if we had a very dry summer 2 years ago, and then followed by a wet summer the year before, that stimulates a mast year. Now, being the scientist I am, I went back through the meteorological wet records for Britain and found out that doesn't really hold true from the last 3 years of weather, so maybe back to the drawing board of that research. But it certainly seems that climate does affect them. But why do you bother doing it? What's the advantage to a tree of, like, you know, producing a few nuts here and there, then having one big year? Well, what you've got is you've got lots of things that eat the nuts. You've got voles, you've got wood mice, you've got squirrels, and they browse. It means that on a year-to-year basis, not that many nuts actually make it down into the ground to produce the next generation of trees. So what they try to do is every few years in these mast cycles, they produce a huge number that overwhelms the herbivores. So they get their fill. There's so many that enough get through to the ground to actually grow and start producing the next generation of trees. So it's actually an evolutionary adaptation to making sure the next generation come through. Now that's really fascinating, but what's more interesting from my perspective is that you can tell a whole ecosystem story here of how climate affects what we call foundation species like trees and has a very wide-reaching impact. Because you think about it, if there's more nuts being produced, then all those small mammals that are eating them are going to be nice and fat going into winter, so more of them are going to survive, and that tends to be what we see. And it's actually been linked to things like ticks, which live on these small mammals, also survive better over winter because they've got more healthy hosts. Now, ticks carry Lyme disease. So what you tend to see is a peak in this Lyme disease the year after a mast year, because the ticks have survived on the small mammals that have survived because there's a mast year. And the impacts of mast years don't just stop at rodents. They can actually change the breeding strategies of some birds. Birds like crossbills will take a slightly different strategy to react to the abundance of fruit. So it's just another example of how a really interesting phenomenon driven by the weather can have far-reaching ecosystem effects. Now, in parts of the world where you do get mast years, these species that are invasive mammal species that are herbivorous, so they're eating the nuts, their invasions, the rate of their spread can be hugely increased through a mast year because they have better survival rates and much more able to breed and to spread. So just something as simple as a tree having an adaptation to maximise its chances of creating the next generation can have far-reaching effects. And as no doubt you've realised, there's a link to climate change here. And what we're starting to see is much more variable and unpredictable weather. And I've noticed myself that mast years seem to be increasing in their frequency, so we're getting them more often. So what you're seeing is you're not seeing mammals die off so much in winter, and the evolutionary advantage for trees of having a bust and boom sort of year is not there anymore. So it's going to be interesting to see what this leads to, and I don't think the search has really been done. Anyway, if you're walking around the woodlands this year and you're seeing lots of nuts and fruits and think, that seems a bit more than usual, you'd be right. And mast year, that's the reason why.
I love it when Gareth comes up with exciting stuff that I'd never heard of before and explains things that I've seen in nature but couldn't really put a name to. Had you guys heard of mast years before?
No. I knew that those little nuts that fall out of beech trees are called beech mast. So now I'm thinking maybe people used to eat them, but that's as far as my knowledge went.
Yeah. Amanda, had you heard of it before?
No, I hadn't. So it was really insightful to hear actually what it is.
Yeah. I noticed on a couple of recent walks out and about that that the hedgerows were really full this year, and I'd made some comments to the people that I've been walking with. But now I know why. So thank you, Gareth, for bestowing your wisdom upon us.
Yeah, that's true. I remember after the first lockdown, seeing loads of massive acorns in the trees, and someone on the radio said it was because we'd all been in lockdown, and I thought, I mean, it may be a factor, but I think it's probably more to do with what Gareth was talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, I reckon.
So I might be the newest person on the team at the moment and for the last few weeks, but that's not to last, and here we have Darwood, our new team member.
Hi Darwood.
Hi.
Hey, Darwood, it's Chris. How you doing? All right?
I'm doing good, yeah. Nowhere to be, but yeah, apart from that.
Good. Well, yeah, I don't have anywhere to be either. Yeah, we've been really excited about speaking to you, so we're glad to finally get this arranged.
Oh, likewise, yeah.
Cool. And one of the things, actually, that we asked, we all shared when we first started doing the podcast together, was how we started getting into nature in the first place. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could share with the listeners some of the reasons why you started getting into nature.
Oh, yeah, gladly. I think from a young age, we were very much encouraged to be outside in nature and sort of just be outside in the garden and just to be very much sort of surrounded by wildlife and nature, encouraged by my mum mainly. And I think it was also helped by me being homeschooled for the first few years of my life.
Oh, right.
Because that kind of directed my interest towards specific things and specifically wildlife and nature. And it also helped that we were all nerds and watched David Attenborough almost religiously, which obviously sparked my interest for the natural world because he's literally one of my greatest heroes.
Yeah.
And he's a wildlife filmmaker, which is something I aspire to be and have always aspired to do. And so, yeah, it was just being surrounded by wildlife and nature and reading animal books and reading wildlife encyclopedias that just got me really enthralled and interested in nature.
Yeah.
And as I grew up, I realized that I wanted to do something about that interest because I didn't want it to be just something that I observed and didn't do anything about. I wanted it to be something that I could physically help get better as I saw all of the problems around me, especially with the environment. And that just led into me taking up things like bird watching and nature identification.
Mm.
And these things helped me get into more physical aspects, I think, of conservation.
Well, it's clear then, Darwood, how you came to be so enthusiastic about nature. And we know that, like us, you like sharing that enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about how you do that, please?
So, as I've sort of mentioned before, one of the things I'm really interested in is getting in touch with more of the physical side of wildlife. And one of the ways that I spread that enthusiasm is through writing. I really, really enjoy writing. And so I write actually two blogs on wildlife at the moment. One's for general wildlife observation and the other one specifically for marine wildlife. And the general wildlife one was really sort of an attempt for me to actually put my thoughts and my feelings on the environment and nature into words and to really share it with other people, because I really thought this is something that I need to talk about and there's only one place where I can actually get people to listen, and that's writing it on the internet, which is, I think, how most people get other people to listen to stuff they're talking about, even if it's a load of rubbish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I write that blog and hopefully people read it about my observations in wildlife. And it started off as just that. It started off as me just talking about what I'd seen in the garden or what I'd seen around me. But it really sort of evolved into something more because I realized that I can use this platform now to give my views on things that I think are actually important. So it became more politically charged and it became more important for me to say there are things that are happening right now and that are affecting the environment. And I need you to see these things for what they are. And so that sort of turned into a more activist kind of view of the world. And so my blog is becoming more political. And another thing that I started to do at the same time was to not only write things down, because that is an aspect of getting people to talk about and think about what you do, but also you need to actually have a physical impact, I think a direct impact on the environment. So I started to do more volunteering in nature reserves and things like that, and just to work more with the physical aspect of wildlife, which is something that also interests me. I also want to become someone who works in the field and has a direct impact on the natural environment.
That's amazing, Darwood. It sounds like you're doing a lot of great action for nature and wildlife, and I'm sure there's a lot more to come. So we're introducing you to our listeners today. So in that spirit, what other things are you into? And how do those sort of influence your love of nature?
So, like I've said before, I really enjoy writing and I enjoy reading. And I think one of the core aspects of who I am and what I really want to be in the future is a storyteller.
Yeah.
So I really want to spread stories. And I think the sharing of stories in general is just one of the most beautiful and important things that can happen in the world.
Mm.
So one of the other things I do, apart from factual writing and blog writing, is fictional writing. So I like writing stories, short stories, and I like illustrating those stories with drawing. So art is another thing that I'm really interested in and that I do. If you look at all my textbooks, they're all covered in doodles.
Nice.
And quote-unquote unsellable, as my dad says. So art, reading, writing, politics, Another thing would be something that I'm more practicing now because I want to become it in the future is filmmaking and photography. They're things that I'm interested in right now.
Cool. Well, we've just started getting to know each other, haven't we, Darwood? But I'm sure you'll end up doing all of those things. And before you do, I'm stoked that you'll be joining us with the team to get into podcasting. So welcome and thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you. And thank you for having me on. It's been quite an honour, actually.
Yeah, thanks very much, Darwood. We're Pete and Gareth and Amanda and I are really excited and we're looking forward to getting you on it and recording an episode with you soon.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, I'm super looking forward to it as well. Thank you.
I'm so chuffed that Darwood's joining the team. He's really cool. He's a good laugh. He loves his nature. He's a great addition. You can find Darwood on Twitter at Go Wild for Bees. He's the Green Naturalist on WordPress, and he's also running our Twitter account. So you can find him there, and that's at Go Wild Pod, which is now our handle on all of our social media streams. And I'd just quickly like to say as well, thank you very much to Ryan Dalton, who's the host of Into the Wild podcast. Darwood was on a brilliant episode of that recently. That's what prompted us to contact him and invite him to join our team. So thank you very much, Ryan, for introducing us to our new team member. And I recommend Into the Wild podcast. It's great, loads of great nature stuff, and definitely the best music of any nature podcast that I've ever heard. Thanks, Ryan.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to working with Darwood too. He's got so many great passions, and yeah, maybe he'll be the next Attenborough.
I don't see why not. Darwood and yourself, Amanda, we've met some great people making the podcast so far who've taken the step up to getting involved in the project as a whole. Maybe our next team member is listening now. Maybe that's you. If you fancy getting involved, just get in touch through our social media. So as we're recording this episode, we've just gone into the first day of the second coronavirus lockdown. This whole podcast started out of the first lockdown because, well, we had a bit of time on our hands, but we also realised how important nature was going to be for people as one of the few things that they could get out and do. So although it's not a beautiful sunny spring, I would really encourage all of you to make the most of the time that might be afforded to you with this lockdown, and to get out and enjoy the wonderful UK autumn. Find some woods. Everything's orange and brown at the moment, and it's really wonderful. That was episode 11. Thanks very much for listening. We really appreciate it. If you do get the chance, we'd love for you to give us a review or some ratings. That would really help. We're going to be recording the next episode in the next couple of weeks. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks, Pete and Amanda, for chatting to me over the internet this evening.
It's all right.
Thanks. It's been fun.
Yeah, it has. So that's it. Bye-bye for now.